Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Robert Bound, and on the show today we've enlisted the help of a couple of experts to let you know everything you need to listen to and see this week in the world of music and art. And those experts are Chief Rock and Pop Critic for The Times, Will Hodgkinson, and the art dealer and advisor, Kathleen Fox-Davies. Plus, we'll meet the director of the National Museum of Modern and Contemporary Art in Seoul to take the temperature of the city's art scene. We'll have our staff pick this week from Monocle's Bill Luty, and of course Fernando Augusto Pacheco will be here to run us through the charts from another country. Where might that be? You'll have to stay tuned to the Monocle Arts Review all time to find out. First things first, Kathleen and Will, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I like it when I walk into the studio a little bit late, not flustered, just late, and my two guests who've never met each other before are sort of shooting the breeze.
We're chatting away happily.
In this case, about Father John Misty, Will's first choice, who obviously Kathleen knows, and kind of wondering, is this guy for real?
I'm getting an education.
Okay, it's good. We're all learning here around this table.
We are.
Today.
So I'll just do a very quick potted history of Father John Misty, because it helps tell the story of what he's doing now. He was, as Josh Tillman, which is his real name, he released, I think, maybe 8 albums of sort of rather serious, heartfelt, I'm sad and I've got a big beard folk music.
Who isn't sometimes?
Exactly. Yeah. And it was, you know, they're okay, not massively engaging, or a bit self-pitying and also taking himself rather too seriously. So they're all right. There's lots of people doing that. At the same time, he was the drummer in the Fleet Foxes, who then became very successful.
And that's the catapult, presumably, from which this new Father John Misty thing, sort of, that
it
was
is,
the engine
but it's
of it.
Very, very different. Yeah. So Fleet Foxes, it's quite serious music. It's very beautiful, big church-like harmonies, you know, lyrics about sort of grappling with religious faith and all this kind of stuff. So when he emerged as Father John Misty, obviously it's a pseudonym, he started off... sort of, there's an album called Fear Fun, and then there's another one called I Love You, Honey Bear, and he was kind of playing the role of this rather louche LA songwriter.
Yeah.
So touches of Harry Nilsson, touches of Randy Newman, definitely John Lennon, you know, all the kind of Lost Weekend, early 70s, Hellraisers.
I love all that stuff.
So, you know, and I always thought, well, I like Father John Misty, but it's silly as well. There's something rather silly about it.
Yeah.
Listen to this album, and... I still think he's quite silly, but I also think he might be the most interesting person working in pop songwriting, whatever you want to call it, today. It's so clever. These songs are really about how we live now. So there's all kinds of stuff about social media, and there's a line about bedding Taylor Swift inside the Oculus Rift. And I didn't even know what an Oculus Rift was.
So that's a VR
virtual
thing, right?
Virtual reality thing.
Yeah.
So it's all this sort of stuff, and at the same time, he's sort of lionizing himself while mocking himself and mocking the idea of the genius.
I think just to give it some context, we need to listen to a bit of this, don't we? We're going to have a slice of the title track from the new album called Pure Comedy. Real or fake? Fake or real? You decide, possibly, maybe we will by the end of the programme. This is Father John Misty.
Comedy. Now that's what I call pure comedy. Just wait until the part where they start to believe they're at the center of everything and some all-powerful being endowed this horror show.
Okay, it's Pure Comedy slice of, anyway, by Father John Misty. The album is out at the end of this week, is it? Of the same name. From that, we can discern a little bit. It sounds a bit like Todd Rundgren in a minor key or something.
It's a little bit like that. The song is very interesting because initially you think, okay, it's a protest song about the usual targets, you know, which are generally from songwriters that tend to be left-wing, and it's attacking the right wing. Actually, it's much more than that. It's really analysing what human nature is. So, you know, it starts off, I think it starts off by saying, you know, our heads are too big for our bodies. In other words, we shouldn't be born. And so it's kind of saying the way that humanity is set up is fundamentally flawed. So it's going to go wrong. And so, you know,
a man unscared of tackling the big issues of the day or any day.
Exactly. So it's kind of, you know, going right back to, and, you know, he tackles religion. He came from a very, very religious background. And I think he's lost his faith, but at the same time, it's, you know, I always think when the cross goes in, it never quite comes out. So, yeah, you know, there's an element of that. He's really interesting. And at the same time, I think he is probably, you know, he is a kind of annoying rock star type.
Yeah.
But he's clever enough to know that and to look at what being an annoying rock star means in 2017.
Well, I wonder, we might transpose this to the art world in a minute with Kathleen, but musically, finally on this one, Will, where do we stand? Is this, you know, as I say, it's just very much a step outside of the Fleet Foxes, as you say, sort of, you know, wonderful choir and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But how does this compare with Fear of Fun and with I Love You, Honey Bear?
This one is much more sophisticated. I would say it's there's an element of pastiche while being very rooted in the early 70s sound. And so his producer is a guy called Jonathan Wilson, who's kind of become the go-to guy for reviving the Laurel Canyon LA sound.
Yeah.
But he's also working with a guy called Gavin Bryars, who's a modern classical, I guess, composer. And so he's expanded it, but it's deliberately retrogressive music. But the themes he's dealing with are completely modern. So essentially, he's kind of taking the history of music, and especially the kind of music which tends to be the big influence, which is, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And he's going somewhere with it.
Who does this remind you of, Kathleen? The kind of person that is of undoubted talent, but kind of can't wait to tell you about it. Will was saying when we walked in about the video when you saw him live at the Hackney Empire or something, the video that preceded the gig of the sort of self-loving auteur.
It was more than a video. It was actually a film about an album that hasn't actually come out yet, which is his own.
Yeah.
And there's lots of pictures of him, shots of him in a dressing gown, you know, looking terribly pained, rather like Harry Nilsson. You know, so
I'm getting a bit of a Julian Schnabel vibe from this.
Yes, very much.
Am I right?
I think we have a lot of characters like this in the art world.
Well, this is what I'm interested to know. To be a great artist, does it make any difference what kind of a person you are?
I think it's really difficult.
Great question.
It's really difficult because sometimes it is the personality that makes the art, but sometimes it is the personality that can destroy it if you actually get to know the individual.
Someone that buys a work always wants to, you know, the best thing, the holy grail is meeting the artist, is having a bit of hangout time, is knowing
patronage.
Is exactly that thing, is having them around your dinner table. Are there people that you've had to steer perhaps away from that sort of interaction?
There are artists I've had to actively keep away from clients, very, very eager clients that did want to become patrons and become part of the artist's lives and interwoven into that creative fabric. But it would just destroy the view of the work sometimes. But it doesn't sound like that's what's happening with this artist, that he somehow is transcending that, but only just.
I think he's in danger of he's parodying himself, and I think he's in danger of parodying his parody if he's not careful.
Yeah. There we go. It is a purely artistic kind of idea, this, isn't it? I kind of like this, the person playing the artist. Lots of people have done that. Jeff Koons had his last show here in London, I was reminded.
Well, it is a character, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a character that's being played.
If you want to tell Will who the people are that you've had to steer away from, that, I promise I won't listen, and I promise it won't go out. These microphones aren't switched on. You can tell. Maybe later. Okay, it's Father John Misty. The new album is out next week. It's called Pure Comedy, as recommended by Will Hodgkinson, who moves now seamlessly onto Moon Landings. A bit more of a chipper affair, this. None less weird, though.
Moon Landings.
Talk us through these guys.
Yeah, Moon Landings is a very, very British mess. I think there's something very, very American about Father John Misty. And, there's a kind of sophistication to what he does. Moon Landings is like Britain in the midst of Brexit, essentially. It's chaotic.
It's a rabble.
Yeah. It's really good. It's two guys from Sheffield who have this band called the Excentronic Research Council. And they're into vintage synthesizers, and it's all very experimental and weird electronic. And they've teamed up with a bunch of other people, one of them being Leah Saudi, who is in a South East London band called the Fat White Family, who are sort of very degenerate and messy and punk rock. Pretty good stuff. But also Sean Lennon. Not only Sean Lennon, but his mum, Yoko Ono.
What a brilliant weird band that is, right?
It gets weirder. There is also the singing cowboy from The Village People. He's on there as well.
This is great. Are they mostly in the studio at the same time, or is there a lot of guesting? Do you think there are some vocals flown in from LA, or have these cats hung out in the same studio?
I don't think they're, you know, getting it together in the country and spending 6 months,
no,
you know, locked away in a studio. But, you know, I don't think Yoko Ono is down there, you know, I don't know, screaming every morning from 9 to 5. But, They Sean Lennon, it was a friend of Leah Saudi from the Fat White family. And then, obviously, you know, Yoko's his mother. So he got her involved. And they're just a very interesting bunch. And it's sort of this song Black Hands I like, because the video has Leah Saudi wearing this kind of hideous 70s glam outfit with these big, huge boots. And he's walking around Sheffield in the sort of, you know, really kind of grimy streets. And everyone's laughing at him. And, you know, he has schoolgirls, you know, kind of poking him and all this kind of stuff. So it's sort of the idea that, you know, the freak, the eccentric is...
sort of pricking the pomposity of the rock star here as well, right?
Oh, yeah, but in this case, he's... I mean, I don't think he ever really thinks he is a rock star. Or, you know, this is kind of... There's no real pomposity there, yeah. Here. But it's also, I think, it's the idea that the eccentric, the outsider figure is becoming marginalised once more. You know, and sort of there was a period when these people were celebrated and now we're in danger of isolating them again.
There is some line here, isn't there, about, you know, the little England fantasy. We're finding ourselves in the little England fantasy that we've tried to escape for so long. Should we have a bit of a slice of this and let our listeners and Kathleen, who is champing at the bit, hear this crazy musical monstrosity of moon landings. And this is a cut called Black Hands. That was Black Hands, a slice from a new album called Interplanetary Class Classics from Moon Landings, a kind of odd sort of supergroup, I suppose, of sorts.
I think it's essentially, it's the two guys from the Excentronic Research Council and guests. but Leah Saudi is pretty much...
Yeah, and that sounds very Fat White Family there.
It does.
Rhythm, it's got that kind of
bit
driving...
Bit like Cramps.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
A bit rockabilly, but also sort of that sort of dirty electronic sound.
Kathleen, what did you make of that?
It was not what I was expecting when you named all of the artist collaborators that were a part of that at all.
Yeah.
So... Surprising.
It is surprising.
Yeah. I wanted a bit of Ono in there, actually.
Ono's not on that track, but it's very underground. I mean, this is not music that's got any ambition to crack the mainstream. It's setting its stall in a kind of, you know, a completely underground world, but they're doing it really well and fantastic live band.
I was going to say these must be live, like Fat White Family, all amazing, just was wild and visceral and willful kind of live performances. What are the chances of all these people getting on stage together, I wonder?
I think maybe getting Randy from the Village People and Yoko is going to be hard, but I think getting Leas from the Fat White Family won't be very hard.
It'll be difficult to keep his shirt on.
Exactly.
That's a fact. It's good stuff. It's Moon Landings, and we have Black Hands. The album's called Interplanetary Class Classics, out now. OK, well, thank you very much for your choices. Now, before we move on to Kathleen Fox-Davis's art picks this week, we're going to hear what a member of the Monocle editorial team has been listening to, watching or reading. And today, it's the turn of Monocle researcher Bill Looney.
Welcome to the Café Belgique show on Red Light Radio with today's special guest, Alice.
On Monday, at the beginning of the week, I discovered a new radio station that I'd never heard of before. It's called Red Light Radio. It's based in Amsterdam, in the Red Light District. They've taken over one of the booths that was formerly used by the prostitutes there, and they've decked it out with lots of radio kit. And they have DJs all day, every day, from about 11 a.m. until about 11 p.m. They've got guest DJs, they have regular shows. They also, as an organisation, do parties, events, they do exhibitions, so it's a bit of a kind of art collective / radio station, and I've been listening pretty much non-stop since the beginning of the week.
Excuse me. I'm a Frenchman. And I'm afraid I don't speak very well English, but...
I sit on the same table on the Monocle editorial floor as the books team, and they've just come back from researching the Amsterdam Guide. And as part of their research, obviously they went to lots of restaurants, lots of hotels, little shops. They also found out about this cool radio station. They told me about it. I thought, oh, that's definitely something I should check out as I work in the radio. Seems like just a bit of career research. And I was hooked instantly. I think one of the reasons that drew me to it is that you can see there's a video stream. So you go onto the website and the radio immediately starts playing, and then there's just one shot and you can see the radio studio, you can see the DJ working away. And something about the fact that you can actually see them there really does make it feel live and exciting, I think. So most of the music that I've been listening to, and I think this is why I've taken it on so much, is deep, bassy, beat-driven electronic music, what you might call dance music, although some of it's kind of too dark to dance to. I think it's amazing to kind of put that on and have it in your headphones while you're trying to get something done. It's like proper concentration music. One of the things I like about it is the sense of being there and being part of it, because you can see the DJs and it does seem like a real community. The building that they're in is in the same building as other art collectives. There's a record store there, and it's like this whole building that's been taken over and turned into kind of an art space. So it does feel like a community, and you really get the sense of that when you can see the DJs switching over, because obviously you can see them through the video feed. It's a bit clunky. I quite like the fact that it's not so polished. So there's bits where there's silence because one DJ's taking their CD out and the next one's putting something in. And they're all having a laugh about it. And sometimes you can see them panicking and being like, oh my God, I need to make something play. And the people that run the station, they're always just like, yeah, don't worry about it. It all adds up to this part of like, it feels like it's just some people there. You feel like you know these people, even though I've never met or heard of them in my entire life.
Rio de Janeiro. Whoa. Sao Paulo. Whoa. Africa, we, whoa, whoa. Worldwide vibration, you know, this reggae music. Africa,
we, this closest station that I know of that's like this one is one here in London called NTS, which is very similar. It's all about pushing great new music or underground music, and they have the same thing. They have every hour, they'll have a different guest DJ, they have regular people. It's been going for a bit longer, and because we're in London, maybe because they're a slightly bigger name, they do get huge names coming in. So like big electronic music artists like Fortet, Floating Points, the DJ Andrew Weatherall's always on. So if you want big names, that's the place to go, I suppose. Because that's so polished, I find it to be less endearing than Red Light Radio, and also they don't have the video stream. I wish I wasn't such a sucker for the video stream. It's kind of stupid, isn't it? But there's something about it that just keeps drawing me back.
Acquiring entrance to the temple is hard but fair. Trek through godforsaken elements because the reward is well worth the journey. Stay steadfast in your pursuit of the light. The light is knowledge.
Thanks, Bill. You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review, and I'm Robert Bound. And I'm joined in the studio today by the chief rock and pop critic for The Times, Will Hodgkinson, who just gave us his music selection for this week, and the art dealer and advisor, Kathleen Fox-Davies, who now will be putting her advising skills to good use as we discuss a couple of shows checking out in London this week. Let's start on Cork Street, Kathleen, with the Flowers Gallery. Now, this looks wonderful. I printed off some bits and bobs so we could all kind of share and share alike. Now, this is wonderful. This is I believe an artist that you represented back in the day.
10 years ago, yeah. Actually. We're going to head over to Flowers Gallery, where Scarlett Hoofgrofflin, the Discovery show, is opening. It's a small exhibition. It's pretty incredible, actually. Scarlett Hoofgrofflin is a photographer who takes an anthropological approach to her work. She is combining photography, performance, land art or earthworks, however you want to call it, and sculpture to create these pieces that are simultaneously raising ideas about environmental awareness as well as social ideas of displacement and identity. I think in a very successful way, actually.
They're exceptional, striking images. I like also the way that my script is color-coordinated.
It matches.
With that. That's good.
It does match.
The blue sky, the deep blue sky and the hot pink of this installation,
What's actually important to know about her work, this show at Flowers is more than a decade of travel and exploration that they are exhibiting, but she is working with film on an analog camera. There is no photoshopping. There's no enhancement of the color. What you see is actually, it's a record of a performance, or of what she calls them, of an intervention into nature. It's all happened. It's all been there. So she's traveling the world to these impossibly remote, beautiful, harsh environments actually immersing herself into the cultures and the people there that have survived against all odds, that have really learned to endure in these impossible locations. So this show specifically, we see salt flats of Bolivia, we see landscapes of the island of Madagascar, we are in the South Pacific, we're in the deserts of the Middle East, and we're also up in Lapland in beautiful snow-covered forests in Sweden. And everything is different. Each performance or sculpture, if you will, in these landscapes is unique and different, but each piece is unified by this impossibly beautiful blue sky that runs almost as a cohesive strip throughout the gallery as each piece relates to the next.
And these are kind of often cloaked figures, or not cloaked figures exactly, but there is a bit of Christo.
This is,
so some
yes,
of this, a mini
yes.
Christo
they've,
to this work.
They've got, there are there are two, possibly three, that can be seen in this idea of wrapping. Mm. She's taken, these are some of the more recent works, but she's really taken to the idea of the veil, or of wrapping and fabric, that it's a way of both cloaking and hiding, but also, as you can see with this specific piece, which are two men and a camel that have been wrapped in a pink fabric, where you can just make out what's happening underneath. They are technically hiding. They can't see you, but you can see them, and they stick out like a sore thumb in the desert landscape. This piece is actually quite unique, and because it's the only piece that you can see the traces of the human hand on the environment. You've got tire tracks, you've got the footprints, you've got, when you get close to the really large piece, this is the work that they actually have in the window if you pass by the gallery on Cork
Street.
That's
the one I put in the window.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. But you've got a debris litter that has really scarred and permanently changed this almost Martian landscape of the Middle Eastern desert.
I was going to ask you about the idea of this being shot on film, working with what is now considered old tech, apart from art photography, I suppose. And is that the idea of not being able to mess around with it? The idea of record, of almost reportage of truth in that?
It is 100% the idea of actually recording something that happened as proof. The piece that we've just been talking about, they were actually people or animals that were wrapped, so they just get up and walk away. But oftentimes in other works, it's placement of objects. There is a piece called Carpet, which is phenomenal. It's the salt flats of Bolivia. And in these geometric shapes that are created by the cracks in the salt flats, she's placed brightly, almost impossibly bright oranges and yellows and reds to make what looks like a carpet. And they're spices, so it's all natural. But because there's also an amazing wind that goes across this desert of sorts, it was gone almost as soon as she'd put it together. So it's a record of a performance, of a happening, of an instance, of her making her mark on this land that has remained untouched, generally. And just as soon as she was there, there was no trace of her to be there again, except for the image.
There is something nice about that idea of sort of happenstance and leaving no trace,
I suppose.
And I suppose that is exactly, you presumably take a few test shots. There are a few of these about. One makes the cut, I suppose, and these will be reprinted. I suppose these will be additions.
These would be the works that are additions.
But there is also that idea of the shot before and the shot afterwards, which is always the interesting thing you kind of want to see, right? These are things
the
that
contact
you've been,
sheet.
The contact
she would actually
sheets.
Have a contact sheet. Which
are
is,
these the things that you've been party to with her?
Not for this show coming together. So not in a good decade.
Yeah.
But the works are incredible, and I don't know if she has had help editing to actually select the final pieces that go onto the gallery wall or not. But each piece is different. Each piece is making a different comment, whether it be on ideas of histories and legends or on what we value as a society. With the idea of the veils and the cloaking, she's very much touching on the ideas of migration and identity as people are being displaced into new locations. And the veil is protecting and hiding, but also you sticking out like a sore thumb in the new location. And is it really serving to protect? In that same way, there is a piece called Turtle, which is, it's a girl naked crouching on the shores of Madagascar with the shield or shell of a turtle on her back. And it's ironic because that shield is meant to actually be protecting her, but it didn't protect that endangered turtle. That the shell is now being sold in shops to tourists.
There is so a strange, after 10 strange, years of working on this, or after a few years, presumably putting a project like this, which involves so much travel and so much waiting to get that perfect shot, it is I guess it's gratifying to see that it suddenly reaches a great moment of context, as it seems like it might be doing now. But it is also sad that context has to exist.
It has to exist, yeah. Well. But for Scarlett Tooth Gruffalo, it takes her 3, 4, 5 months living with the people in each location to decide how she's going to approach the location, how she's going to respectfully comment, and whether she's making a mark on the landscape or simply existing within it to make a record. And then she has those people from whether she's lived with them or from whatever society she's been immersing herself in, participate and perform and take part in the actual performances.
Well, they're stunning images. It's wonderful to know so much about the backstory of them and how she works and all the rest of it. It's called Discovery. The show is by Scarlett Tooth Gruffalo, a Dutch photographer, a Dutch artist with a very well-stamped passport, we can assume. That's on at the Flowers Gallery until the 29th of April. Kathleen, where are we going next? We're going to Finland. But we're actually staying in London at the same time.
Well, Finland's coming to London, actually, at the Purdy Hicks Gallery. This one closes this week, so head over.
This is your last chance saloon choice.
This really is. Yep. This is a show very aptly called Five Finnish Photographers, and it is exactly what it says it is. Purdy Hicks Gallery has put this on as a celebration of the gallery's relationship with the Helsinki School, which is where... amazing. It creates amazing photographers, based obviously in Helsinki, but also this year, particularly to celebrate the centenary year of Finland and its independence. There are a couple of things going on in London, I'm sure, and also in Finland itself.
And there are some, the first images that struck me were, now knowing this is the 100 years of Finnish independence, the first things I saw were these rocks on the beach, which are sort of bound up in rope. There's something of
ownership and something
to do with those. Possibly.
Yeah, it's quite interesting coming from the last show we were just talking about, coming into this one, because the artists are in very different ways using almost the same ideas and same language to approach their subject. The artist that you're talking about is Anna Revila, and the series is called Bond, which are basically altered landscapes. She's very interested in the idea of rope tying. It's the Japanese art, kimbaku, I believe, which is literally means the beauty of tight binding. And that rope symbolizes the connections among people and the divine. It's a way of not only holding something together, but being at that verge of breaking apart. So she goes into these natural environments that she finds, where she thinks that there's some amazing tension in the landscape, where that as a composition in itself would be interesting. She then binds the rocks with rope. So in the works that we see in this specific show, they are dark rocks with white rope. So the finished pieces become altered. The rocks are no longer just rocks. All of a sudden their volume increases and the space around them changes. And she's literally used with the tying and the binding as a way of drawing and making her own mark and harnessing that nature.
Yeah, there is something that suggests sort of vulnerability there. There is absolutely, as you say, the tension there. There is, I suppose, a beauty in the detail of the rope, but you're also wondering what else might have been changed in that landscape, because the rest of it is just immutable, is immovable, is, well, presumably the Finnish landscape as well, which I suppose has its own sort of moments of being a little bit moon-like at times. So it's kind of quite powerful stuff, even from the small images I saw.
There's a beauty, but there's also just a hint of violence within each picture, I find, and the images in the show are small, so you do have to step into the space of the picture to actually encounter them and see what's going on. I think they're incredibly sophisticated and insightful for an artist who's actually quite young and just starting out in her career. So I'm excited to see where she goes from there. Looking at the entire show, you've got, so this was the youngest artist that was included. You have the oldest artist, I'm sorry to say, to her, called Ulla Jakisalo. Her works are photography, collage, and assemblage. She's taking found images. For this show, they are fashion images, and then cutting out images from newspapers, magazines, and really putting them all together, piercing the paper with needles. There's embroidery involved. But she's approaching these tactile, physical, personal images in a really strange, dreamlike state. So along with the rope tying and what we saw from Scarlett Tooth Gruffalo across town, dealing with these big ideas in a surrealist way.
And this is, I suppose, something that, I mean, you know, studying, as you say, these are all five graduates of the Finnish Helsinki School of Photography. There is a way that now in 2017, taking a picture, we have to acknowledge the mess of photography, the realm of truth and photography, I suppose, all these things. We have to question what the point of it is and whether it's an art form or the rest of it. This is interesting stuff. Why is Helsinki such a hotbed for photography?
Helsinki's quite amazing, actually. Finland in general, photography is the main form of contemporary art expression. And I would venture to say that photography, that fine art photography from the Helsinki School is Finland's most successful export. You've got, I think the entire country is something like 5 million people. It's half the population of London. And you've got something like 400 students coming out of this school. The only thing that really binds them together is this idea of the conceptual. There has to be a founding idea and message and motivation to why you're taking a picture and why you're creating something. It's not, you see a lot of the new hot American artists specifically I'm thinking about that go out with the digital camera, take 5,000 images, and they've got a show because you can pick 15 great ones out of there. I could do that too.
Yeah, that's not
it's,
really.
It's a bit of luck and it's a bit of perseverance, but it's not a lot of creative insight and skill. And you're going back to the basics with this school. You've got here artists that have been trained in, with Ulla in her case, it's very much about the craft of making, of sewing, of embroidery. She's going back to that, but using and harnessing the potential and also the limitations of photography and the flat plane and works on and working with paper to do that. You've got Anna, who is using sculpture, performance, and looking at other cultures in a way of understanding and perceiving her own world. And you see this thread of the conceptual tying together five artists in this show, but also the entire 20 years of the Helsinki School together. And when you look at the artists, you can see it. You can see there's a definite language that's being interpreted in different ways, but it does hold this amazing creative concept that has come out of the university there.
Interesting, as a commercial show as well at the Purdy Hicks Gallery, these five Finnish photographers, the kind of curatorial notes for commercial work is far more sparing, isn't it, than if this was a museum show. It tends to be. If yes. People are very less or more loath to tie things together and make a movement and all the rest of it. What about here? Because this feels like this, I want to know more about the Helsinki School. I want to know more about these photographers, these artists. How explicit are the notes on the wall for this?
There really are none. The works stand for themselves, which is amazing. The staff at the Purdy Hicks.
We can't all have a cat. Yeah, we can't walk out around with Kathleen.
No, or the catalog, or have one of the gallery staff talk to you. But this show is very much a taster. It's a teaser. You've got 2, 3, 4 maybe pieces by each artist, but it's just enough to get you interested. These are artists that the gallery has in the regular programming, so you will have entire solo shows, but they're putting them together in very different ways. You've got something like 40-year age gap between the artists, very predominantly female, which is something you don't normally see in the gallery setting, particularly in the major cities, which it's fantastic to see. And they're all approaching things in very different ways. You've got artists that are true photography. You've got artists that are printing on acrylic so that it's transparent and it's about more about the reflection on the wall than the actual photographic piece that you're looking at. You've got things that are reminiscent of Dutch masters' still lives, but are manipulated in such a bizarre way that you have to stand in front of it for a second, scratching your head to figure out what's going on and how that was achieved. And then you've got pieces with embroidery and quite violent needles piercing the paper and sticking out all which way. And then some quite serene landscapes that have almost a more painterly quality than photography. And this is all in one very small space. It's concise, it's perfect, and it's just enough to get you interested to see what else that gallery is going to do with these artists throughout the year.
I love it. It sounds like Helsinki is to the photographer, the female photographer, what Portland, Oregon is to the lonely man with a beard and a guitar, possibly. Just trying to bind my two worlds together here. That sounds amazing. It's five Finnish photographers doing exactly what it says on the tin at the Purdy Hicks Gallery. That is a must-see this week. It closes on the 3rd of April. Get yourself to it. Before that, Kathleen told us about Discovery by Scarlett Hoofs-Grafland, and that's on Flowers Gallery until the 29th of April. Now, last week, Asia's biggest art fair, Art Basel Hong Kong, drew a myriad of buyers, galleries, as well as museum directors to the city. During the busy art week, Monocle's Kurt Lin caught up with Bartolomeu Mari, the director at the National Museum of Modern and Contemporary Art in Seoul, to talk about the country's art scene and, as a Spaniard, what it's like being the first foreign director there.
Seoul, as one of the major cities in the world, has a vibrant, very, very active art scene. In Korea, we have great artists, probably the most interesting, most vibrant and active art scene in Asia. It is also a context in which the modern history of Korea and Seoul as the major city of this context contains a number of conflicts, a number of dramas. If there was a love story, it would be a perfect novel. So all of that makes that the tradition, the Asian tradition, that still is very powerful, and the innovation, the great attractiveness for the new, or the great interest that the Korean society has for the new, finds a very beautiful expression in one of the most dynamic art scenes.
So you're the MMCA's first foreign director in Seoul in its 42-year history. And how are you finding the atmosphere in the Korean branch of the museum?
I was appointed director in December of 2015. And I'm aware of the being the first foreigner to run a national institution is quite exceptional. Yet the museum, my staff and the Ministry of Culture, which is the organization that to which the museum belongs, have made great efforts to make my work very easy and very pleasurable, admitting also that it's a complex institution. We are running three different buildings in the metropolitan area of Seoul, and the museum is also living at this, as we speak, a very important transformation, mainly related to the reshuffling of it, the organization with the creation of new departments and the alignment also of the different areas of the institution into the transformation of the museum as one of the leading institutions in the contemporary art scene, which is part of the reason why I was hired.
So while the government is very obviously supportive to creative scenes such as fashion and also, yes, you know, K-pop, K-drama, how supportive are they to the contemporary art scene?
I think that the Korean administration is one of the most supportive to culture that I have seen from the point of view of the public administration. I come from a context in Europe where the public support to culture is shrinking, or has been shrinking for the past years, especially due to not only economic crisis but also changes in the mentality of the political systems or the political actors that take those decisions. Korea supports culture and Korea supports art very well. One of the major instruments to do that is our museum, but also there is a policy for grants for support of specific projects that I think is generous. Besides that, there is the potential participation or the potential play of the private sector, which I think it is still can be developed. It can grow a lot. I'm totally convinced that properly organized actions and campaigns could bring much more support to the artistic scene through different forms, not only through the market. I think the market is a first instrument of support, but there are many more. And I think patronage, for instance, is something that can grow a lot in Korea because the economy is in good shape, if you compare it to many European economies, of course. And as I said, there are great artists to be supported. So that's the good news.
While the society has been going through some lots of changes yes, over the last few years, and this year, do you feel the impact?
I have the feeling we have witnessed tremendous changes that not only are the cause, but also there are effects, there are results. And this has happened in the last 6 months. Everybody knows that the political crisis that we have lived should lead our country to renewed ambitions and, I would say, higher ambitions. Improvement is something very rooted into the Korean culture. It's something even that comes or is the backbone of the Confucian morale. So improvement is something that is part of a collective endeavor. In that sense, and the changes that have taken place and that are taking place as we speak should go in that direction.
Thanks to Kurt Lynn there for that interview with Bartomu Mari, director of the National Museum of Modern and Contemporary Art in Seoul. Now, to end the show, as always, we have Fernando Augusto Pacheco in the studio for this week's Global Countdown. Fernando, welcome to the programme.
Rob.
And you have come in with a stack of records under your arm from which country?
Well, today I chose the Netherlands. And the reason why I chose, because we were talking about Ed Sheeran just a few weeks ago, how he was dominating the UK charts because of streaming, because now it counts in most charts around the world.
This was Will's first question, was are the top 10 all Ed Sheeran songs?
There is one Ed Sheeran song on the top 10. It's one of the few ones that are not this Dutch rapper. He's basically a Dutch Algerian rapper called Buff. He's only 24 and he's been a major hit in the Netherlands. His album called Slapte Kehort was released last week in the Netherlands, and of course people were streaming, and basically 8 out of the 10 songs are from him, you know, so that's a remarkable number. Some people are thinking that the charts are becoming a bit boring because of that, you know, because there's a lack of the diversity in a way.
It's a bit strange, isn't it? It's kind of like basically listening to an album by someone.
Well, I mean, we had, you know, when we were kids, we had a program called Top of the Pops, and had that been going now, you would literally have Ed Sheeran on an hour.
So are we gonna count down? Are we gonna hear some of them or all of them? How's this gonna work?
Let's do a little countdown, and then okay, we hear the number one song, because I have something to tell you about the video as well, which is becoming a little bit of a viral thing in the Netherlands. But let's do a little countdown. Number 5, we have Buff with L.E.B. with Ik Ga Weg, and that's the thing. He's doing a lot of collaborations with other Dutch rappers as well.
Okay.
Number 4, it's his collaboration with Sven Elias with Slapen Rijk. Number 3 is Buff again with Soufiane Ediani with Salam, which is that's actually, I've listened to Salam. It's a very, it was a proper rap, you know, because the number 1 song, I mean, which is actually from Buff as well, sorry, but it is more of a beat, it's kind of more, not tropical house, but there's a more electronic beat to it. But Salam is proper heavy rap in a way, Dutch rap.
Is there a history of this stuff being big in Holland? I mean, seems like so many of their stars are Dutch first and from somewhere else second, and there is it's a sort of proper melting pot like the country is, the charts seem to be. Is this a good week for Buff, or is this kind of what the Dutch charts tend to look like?
I think it's been exceptionally good for Buff, but you know, the hip hop scene in the Netherlands is quite strong, and you're right, you know, it's kind of a melting pot. For example, the number 8 song is a partnership between Buff and Jair Zingu, which is a Dutch Suriname rapper as well. So, you know, they have all the former colonies as well, people who go there.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have quite a rich hip-hop scene as well in the Netherlands. But I think Buff is a little bit of an exception. He's kind of the Ed Sheeran of the moment there. A bit less pop. Well, Ed Sheeran, in fact, is number 2 with Shape of You. So, you know, he's there. Don't you worry.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't you worry.
Right. I was going to call him up and say, you know, sort it out in the Netherlands.
The wheels are coming off, Ed. And where are we going? Number 1, no surprise.
Let's play Habiba and then I'll tell you a funny story about this song.
Okay, that is Buff with Habiba. What's the name of the album that's from?
The album is called Slapte Hort. Okay. I did practice my Dutch a little bit, but it is quite a hard language.
It's good stuff.
It is a hard language to speak.
I think you're coming well to be coming from Brazilian and English to Dutch. You've kind of practiced the gutturality of it. Right,
exactly.
It's tough. It's tough to carry it off.
And something about the song, because in the video, basically it starts with him running with his boxer shorts in a street in Holland. Somewhere. So now there's something called the Habiba Challenge in the Netherlands. So a lot of random Dutch people are running with their boxer shorts in random streets of Amsterdam. So that's the Habiba Challenge there, you know. So
it's really good.
Shall we try here in London? It's quite a sunny day today. Exactly.
Kathleen, is that going to be on the playlist? Is that going to be in the Uber and on the way to the Purdy Hicks Gallery this evening? Okay, good. Will?
It is, and I'm going to do the Habiba Challenge.
Okay.
From my house to the Monocle offices next time. Okay. I'm on the show.
That's quite a, I think that's quite a fair stretch of London to be streaking across. I think that's,
yeah, well,
definitely going to go viral.
Yeah, I might get, you know, sort of pulled over in section somewhere around, you know, Elephant and Castle.
Elephant and Castle, making it sound so much ruder than it really needed to be. That brings us to the end. Fernando, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Val.
It's great stuff. And a great week for Boof. A great week for Finnish photographers. An interesting week, as ever, for Father John Misty as well. And moon landings. We shall definitely try to strike gold and see them live. Thank you to both my guests, Will Hodgkinson and Kathleen Fox-Davies. Today's show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, whose voice you just heard, of course. Join us again at the same time next week. But for now, here's the rest of that number one track by Boof. This is Habiba. Huh? Strong Boof, man. Je bent vies, maar ik doe gemeener. In de club kom je moeder tegen. En ik wil snel weg, want we moeten wegen. En je klant is geholpen, je moet vroeger wezen. Ik was alles kwijt, maar mijn vloed herenigd. Voor mijn zondes af en toe gebeden. Ik ga uitdelen voor een goede prijs. Ik ben een uitgever, ze boeken mij. Van alarm voorzien aan de achterkant.